Monte Cassino, Italy, 1371. Boccaccio, in the initial period of the Reformation and Renaissance, finds ancient manuscripts, sadly neglected, in a library without even a door, dust all over the place, hardly any protection. The great movements of early traditional church histories have subsided, declined, and the care and respect for ancient documentary materials is practically gone. In 1459, Broccalioni becomes an inveterate bibliophile, traveling all around to different monasteries, particularly in France and Spain, Austria, in Switzerland and elsewhere, looking for ancient manuscripts. And it fascinates me to draw a parallel understanding and observation between what began to happen where the Renaissance was concerned and with the discoveries of manuscripts as they finally culminate in what's happening in our last few decades. The great introduction of the dispensation of the fullness of times in 1820 with the appearance of the Father and the Son in glory to the great Joseph, and the initiation of the Church of Jesus Christ in 1830 after the publication of the Book of Mormon, and then the 14 years that followed in 1844 and the death of that great Joseph, with a legacy of additional scriptures and diary and important materials, and then his own great expectations that discoveries would be found to confirm, add, or would be revealed, and great documents would be added to the legacy of materials that we had. And so it is rather interesting to try to list for you more than 100 great discoveries that have been made since 1371, most of them in the last 80 years, that confirm what we've had for 150 years since the church was organized. We might begin nearly any place. For example, the coffin text, now being assembled since 1910, compiled in 1935 to 1961 and now made available in English translation by Faulkner in 1978. The coffin text, many parallels to the temple endowment and to our understanding of heavenly things, pre-existence, and so forth, and parallel to the coffin texts out of Egypt are the pyramid texts as well. They have a similar history, and likewise are now being made available by the same men, from Gardner and from Budge at the turn of the century to our own time. One of the great depositories, however, that has not yet been really tapped or exhausted or looked to into a great deal except by a few German students like Kale, is the Leningrad depositories in Russia. For in Russia is the largest complement of Hebrew manuscripts found anywhere in the world. The Leningrad Public Library has great collections. Jewish materials, because after the dispersion in 70 AD, for nearly 600 to 800 years, maybe lasting as much as 1,000 years, there were Jewish kings and kingdoms in southwest Russia, and many of the records remain there today. Out of the Crimea and the Slavonic areas and the Russian libraries and museums and cultural centers have come such discoveries as Third Enoch, Second Enoch, that we'll mention a little later on. Then we have the discovery of the Bodmer Papyrus in 1958, published in 1959. And this is Christian material of about 175 to 200 AD, 300 years older than their Syriac counterparts, such as the Odes of Solomon. There was the discovery also of the Brucinius text. It was known in London about 1776, today translated in English in the last few years as one Jewa. Testa Sophia as well, the Ashkenazic Codex, likewise known, probably coming out of Cairo, its absolute source still totally unknown, but likewise now available in English translation in the last few years. Parallels in these two texts are rather exciting, dealing with the information that's found parallel to the Pergate Prize in the Book of Abraham. There was the Gospel of 12 Apostles, found in 1912, and these and the whole host of kindred documents were found in the Great Depression called the Fayum of Egypt in 1860s in Akkamim, Egypt, Lost Gospels of Peter, Mary, and other documents were found. As these become translated in English and made available, general scholars, not otherwise familiar with ancient Coptic or Sahidic dialects, suddenly have access to very important materials. Latter-day Saints suddenly find in them confirmation of Mormon doctrine, and scholars who know Mormon doctrine wonder where Joseph Smith could have copied the materials. There's also the Rechabite documents of a period of time about the time of Lehi that Dr. Nibley has referred to in a number of his writings. These go back to about the 6th century before Christ. There's many parallels there to the Book of Mormon accounts. The environment and the time and the place is about the same. Important discoveries have been made in Hungary called the Bogomil documents. These are rich in the Enoch materials. There's very beautiful parallels to Mormonism concerning the glory of the adversary in the presence of God, how he was given Godhead over this earth, how he sends down individuals to corrupt and imitate the perfect order, how he sends ministers unto Adam. There's also the great texts of the Pahlavi. These are Iranian in character, Zoroastrian in religion, and Manichaean. The Pahlavi texts have not been fully treated from the standpoint of parallels to Mormonism. A future tape will be dedicated to the text relating to Zoroastrianism, and we've just recently taped the Manichaean materials. There's the discovery at Ebla of nearly 42,000 tablets in fragmental or complete form. Tape 100 described the recovery and discovery of these great documents. There is much there to be studied now in terms of the brass plates, parallels to the Purgate Price, and many other Mormon doctrines. There's the discovery in Oxyrhynchus, Egypt, made in 1885, 120 miles south of Cairo and west of the Nile. Here we have Lost Sayings of Christ and another gospel published by the British Museum in 1933. And there's much yet to come from Oxyrhynchus. It's a source of area where a monastery may have had a fabulous library that's distributed around here and there. At least 12,000 monks were involved and 10,000 nuns. What did they study? What was their library? There's also the Benissa papyrus, most of it coming from this same region and area where we have the sayings of Jesus. Grenville and Hunt were so prosperous in their discoveries in the late decade of the last century. There's the mysterious Shabuka stone, one of the oldest religious texts ever found in the world, coming from the early dynasties of Egypt. Here we have information found in the Purgate Price almost specifically and only, dealing with the individuals, the pre-creation, the pre-existence, and councils, and so forth. Nibley treats much of this material in his book, Abraham in Egypt. Here in the United States, one of the phenomena of discoveries made in Illinois is the Coyster site, an archaeological site which indicates that there was a tremendous surgence of activity about the time of Adam, 4000 B.C., here in America. With the settlements and everything in the Missouri-Illinois area, only the Purgate Price suggested that there were such things going on in America, 4000 B.C. The Odes of Solomon, with many parallels to the new scriptures added to the Purgate Price and the Doctrine and Covenants recently, found in 1906 on the site of an ancient Christian church on the Tigris River in Syria. Likewise, portions of the Odes of Solomon are found in the Manichaean discoveries and elsewhere, even as far distant as Turfan, China. There was the Jewish synagogue of Dura Europus, found also in Mesopotamia, richly endowing us with Jewish material and understanding, not yet fully developed from a Latter-day Saint standpoint, and Lehi's cave, the Ginnat, on the ministerial level of the Israeli government, provided a film and a brief study through the early archaeological society at BYU. South of Jerusalem, they found it by road making. It fell through one of the caves. Inscriptions there are rather of great interest. There was the discovery of the Ethiopian Book of Enoch in 1773 to 1776 by Bruce, the intrepid explorer who found the White Nile, and who brought back three copies, one to be translated by Sir Lawrence in 1921, referred to by Party Prepat in 1840. published in 1820, if I had the date wrong there, referred to by Parley Pripet in 1840, and yet was not the source which Joseph Smith brought his extracts from the Book of Enoch, found in chapter 7 and on in the Moses, Book of Moses, and Pretty Great Prize. A second Book of Enoch was found in Russia, Slavonic source, published in 1912, discussed in tape 121. The Ethiopian Book of Enoch is discussed in tape 106. And third Enoch was found in Russia. After 1863, it became available in various translations, and finally a very large study in 1928. And now, with additions and critical apparatus, is available here in the last several decades, mentioned in tape 107. There are also the Books of Enoch, nearly 16, Aramaic in character, found in K4 of the Dead Sea Scrolls, published several years ago by Dr. Millick, suppressed after 27 years, finally published with great parallels to Mormon doctrine, with names and geography parallel to that found in the revelations given to the prophet Joseph Smith in 1830. There is the Apocalypse of Abraham, found in 1863, with most unique parallels to Mormonism, particularly the Brigade Price, and the Testament of Abraham. These are part of the pseudepigrapha. Since 1912, over 100 books have been recovered. To qualify in this category, the book must be Jewish or Christian in origin, 200 B.C. to about 200 A.D. 50 of these are being edited now through Duke University by Dr. Charlesworth and others to be published by Doubleday. Many in paperback form are being published by Scholars Press. Hugh Nibley makes a great deal of use of these in his Abraham in Egypt. Then there's the great discovery in Turfan, China, by Japanese, Russian, German, and French scholars. From these, the great Manichaean materials are being reconstructed in tape 122. These are discussed. And speaking of China, there is the discovery of the Cave of 1,000 Buddhas, discussed in tape 102, and also in another one dealing with the great discoveries in China, a personal account of my own adventures in 1981 in Western China, with many marvelous parallels to Mormon doctrine. There are also the Mandean discoveries of ancient Iran. Lady Drawer, having spent decades of her life with this ancient people who survived, apparently, from the first century, with certain of their understandings and documents almost intact, discussed in tape 104. It's one of the larger, gross parallels to Mormonism, work for the dead, temple endowment, and other aspects of expectation of preexistence, spiritual creation, and so forth. In Egypt, from the early 1920s into the mid-1930s, Manichaean discoveries were found, over 3,000 pages, mentioned tape 122. And also the Chester Beatty documents found in Egypt, mentioned in tape 106, which has material found in the New Testament and the Old Testament as well, and some interesting pseudepigraphal books confirming some understanding of Mormon's doctrine as revealed in the Book of Moses in the Pergate Price. In Algeria, there was the discovery of the oldest book in the world, a small book, the smallest book likewise. It's called the Cologne Manny Codex. This is discussed in tape 122. Then we might jump to the South Pacific. Here in tape 119, recovered materials, genealogies, and accountings and oral traditions of the Polynesian people show many amazing parallels to Mormonism. As we continue, these same interesting parallels of an Ephraim or Manasseh inheritance are found in Scandinavia. Discourses prepared by Lynn Erickson are in tape 101 and 110. And then there is the discovery at Tana in the Lopnor Desert, a tomb with a veil. These are discussed in the great lecture on the adventures in China. In Palestine, a number of great caves were found with interesting contents. We might list a few of these. These are coming forth now through the Israel Exploration Journal and individuals. There's Nahal Hever, where Bar Kokhba documents were found in 1953 to 1963. And for the first time, the name of Alma ascribed to an individual, the son of Judah, who transferred a deed of land to Bar Kokhba in the second century. the caves of Marabat with documents of the 5th to the 7th century in Greek. There's also the Cave of Letters, the Archives of Babata, Cave of Treasures, the Cave of Har, the Cave of the Pool, the Caves of Jericho, all in 1960 and 1961, providing other source materials that support some Mormon claims. Masada, the Great Masada. Here was a discovery of about 18 documents, including the Ben Sera in ancient Hebrew, and other parallels, documents that seem to be similar to the Qumran scrolls of the Dead Sea. Cairo, Genzia, one of the great discoveries. This Geniza is described in tape 121. 250,000 documents came from this discovery alone. And Hindu texts, the Pian Wen, the Mahabharata, discussed likewise in dealing with the adventures in China. And with some of the ancient discoveries at Turfan and Dunhuang, the Cave of 1,000 Buddhas. There's the tapestry of Juanito in Mexico, which have many parallels to the Book of Mormon. And then the Mexican codices, tape 116 and 117 and 118 provide information on these codices. 152 are now identified and known, some of them 27 feet long, some with interlinear Italian and Spanish, so we can get some idea of their content. And then there's the discovery in Gerna, Egypt. This was the source of the mummies from which the scrolls were derived that Joseph Smith acquired in 1835. At Mount Sinai, we have the great discoveries found there in 1844 to 1859. Tichendorf of the Greek Old and New Testament, the Codex of Sinaiticus. We had a period of time which was called the period of the Cairo Geniza. This lasted 50 years from the turn of the century to 1950. And then we have the 30-year period called the period of the caves after the Dead Sea Scrolls discovery became available in 1950 and 51 and thereafter. Now we're entering what we call the period of the monasteries. Here in the Mount Sinai Monastery, a vault was discovered, a room that had been sealed up. Inside were 27 chests, including a couple pages missing from the Codex Sinaiticus that was given as a gift to the Tsar of Russia in 1859. There are also other vaults and other portions of the library that the Mount Sinai monks will not divulge or give to anybody, on the pretext that the world must return their original text that they thought was clandestinely really taken away from them of the Codex Sinaiticus. That'll be determined, I suppose, in the future. In addition to the Mount Sinai Monastery, there are the Coptic monasteries occupied now by the exiled Christian bishop of the Coptic Church of Egypt. During the reign of Sadat and before his death, the bishop of Egypt, a Coptic bishop, himself a military man, was exiled into the desert. And there in the desert are many monasteries. A friend of mine, Wally Tanner, in 1981, spending months in this area because he was a contributor to a huge encyclopedia, 20 volumes in Nature and Character, and provided a great deal of the funds, has been permitted access to the vaults of these ancient Coptic monasteries. Discoveries will be made there that will be unexpected of major character. So an adventure still lies ahead of us. In the 10th century, there were the writings of the Arab historian, the Talib. And here again, we get confirmation on the garments given to Joseph and the nature and character of the marks on the garments and expressions concerning the garment of Joseph found only in the 46th chapter of Alma in the Book of Mormon. Now that's a very quick rundown on a series of discoveries. Let's go to those that particularly apply to the Book of Mormon for a period of moments here. Stela number 5, long neglected, written up by Dr. Jakeman in 1941, was found by Dr. Sterling of the Smithsonian. Compiled studies now show that this stela depicts the dream of Lehi recorded in 1 Nephi chapter 8. Even the name glyphs for Nephi, Sarah, and Lehi and others seem to appear on this glyph. There's about 132 parallels to the dream of Lehi. No one has come up with an alternative explanation of this stela. Of great interest and found in very restricted source material in English is the Chronicles of Each Little Chochetl He was a royal Aztec, 1568 to 1648. Based on ancient sources, he wrote the history of his people, amazing parallels to the Book of Mormon, published in 1848, but not in English until 1937. Jaredite-Nephite parallels are abundant. Milton R. Hunter used a great deal of this material in his Archaeology of America, Book of Mormon Archaeology. There's the Popu Vuh, the book of the national people of the people of Kichimaya, written in 1554, not in English until 1951. It's termed the Lamanite account of history. There are many parallels. The Popu Vuh also has information concerning the creation of the world, which involves the forefather, the equivalent of Adam, in participation, and a certain sequence found in the temple endowment. Then the great discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, comprising more than 1,000 identifiable documents, 440 unknown works found on the Dead Sea, just 6.5 miles south of Jericho in Palestine. All of the books of the Bible except Esther in the Hebrew canon have been recovered. The Septuagint canon has been recovered in fragmental or complete form, and the Samaritan canon, and 440 works we knew never knew about before. Found in 1945, 5% have been translated. 95% yet remains to be translated. Parallels to Mormon doctrine, organizational practices, and to early Christianity are absolute and recognized. The El Amarna tablets contain official correspondence between Egyptian government and the Palestinian-Syrian areas around 1300 to 1400 BC. These were found at El Amarna in Egypt on the Middle Nile in 1887. Terms such as the land of Jerusalem, used as in the Book of Mormon time and time of Lehi, support the Book of Mormon claims. The Babylonian Chronicles, which I used in 1961 to help develop some of the chronology of the first book of Nephi, was discovered in Nineveh, published in 1923, and verify historically data found in the first part of the Book of Mormon, and helped set the dates of Lehi's time in Palestine quite accurately. There are the Rituals of the Bacabs, providing knowledge of the religion of the Mayas, published in 1965, parallels to temple ceremony, garments, doctrines, and etc. And on the wall of the temple of Monopac are the wall paintings, discovered in 1946. Milton R. Hunter went through some trials to be able to see and photograph this area. This is in Chiapas, Mexico, contained religious parallels, data on struggle between light and dark people and great wars. There's also the historical recollections recovered of Gaspar Antonio Chi and the prophecies of Shalom Balaam. This is pre-Spaniard material, prophetic utterances, coming of white men, and other things are dealt with. But both of these texts have not really been studied extensively by LDS scholars at this time. There is the discovery of the Olmec civilizations, unusual parallels to the Jaredite record ranging from 2000 BC to 300 BC. There's even mention of the honeybee veneration and many other parallels, written up by Cole as the Western Hemisphere's first civilization. There are the temple records and the genealogies of Hawaii. Tape number 119 discusses these in greater depth and provides information, too, on what is found in Polynesia and in New Zealand and elsewhere. Here we have the boats of Hagoth and the large boat that sailed under direction of Hagoth. Implications of Sumerian, Japanese connections perhaps, Northwest Indians, Navajo Indians, South Pacific. The records have been done the work has been done for the children of the captain of that boat and the captain himself. In regard to the cave of Lehi, there's also the estate of Lehi and the tree of Lehi, where a man by the name of Lehi judged his people. These inscriptions found in the cave going back to 596 have been the subject of a film that's been prepared, but it's not in circulation, 22 miles southwest of Jerusalem. This could have been Lehi's estate. It'll be discussed, I suppose, until absolutely confirmed. The Tree of Life, the great carvings at Palenque by Alberto Ruiz on sarcophagus lids were found. Now they're being found all over the world. In the Book of Mormon, it is rather detailed. There's the cylinder seal from Tlatelolco, discovered prior to 1966. This seems to have parallels to the Enthan manuscript prepared by Cowdery. This particular seal seems to be dated about 1000 BC. But it's controversial. and like a number of things where they might provide precise confirmation to Book of Mormon, were carefully and cautiously examined. The possible linear script from pre-classical Mexico found in Yucatan, described by Ancisco in 1953, may be genuine, but progress in learning about writing among American sources is still in an infant stage. No one can read the Mayan writing at the moment, or at least in any great detail. We have likewise the Olmec and Mayan and other Central American and South American carvings of stone, published by non-Mormons in personal books, have led to rather interesting phenomena. One in particular, which is described to the Olmec period, is on page 52 of the book You Walk the Americas, where it shows an individual in a turban-type affair pulling 16 stones out of a sack. He turns and places the stones on a rock. Fingers come out and touch the stones, and in the next panel, he's face to face with a young god. The vision to the brother Jared is obvious here. Agricultural dates in the Southwest and major agricultural centers are dating the ruins within the Book of Mormon period now almost precisely, whereas a few decades ago, it was conjectural. Tens of thousands of ruins found in Central America alone. Only a few hundred have been excavated. Many of them are being identified and will eventually come up for excavation, so great things will be found in the future. The discoveries in Quintana Roo and elsewhere in San Salvador, particularly scientific information concerning the volcanoes of Nicaragua and San Salvador, seem to indicate there may have been some massive destructions associated with the third Nephi account of Christ's appearance here in Americas. That is being examined in greater detail by people in expertise of that region, the Hopi legends. Here we have migrations overland, guided by their lord brother, with seed belts, temple ordinances, parallel migrations, and ceremony accountings and place names even, in terms of their migrations from the Guatemala area and how they came over by boat to this continent. The Taos Indians practice an ordinance so close to temple ordinance that young converts to the church with priesthood garments are sometimes criticized for wearing them in their own communities. Patriarchal blessing of Indians, Japanese, Chinese, and others deal with the Nephite dispersion. 95% of the Japanese and the Chinese who are joining the church are being told that they're the descendant of Ephraim. This raises the question then, how did Ephraim get into these territories? And then we can reappraise the entire first centuries of Chinese history, particularly during the warring states. And who are the Indo-European groups who moved into the Lop-Nor Desert and Chinese Turkestan, carrying with them very interesting studies, which are described in some of the tapes that will be forthcoming. There was a Georgia symposium held on the 20th of October, 1973, to deliberately consider transatlantic contacts. Here we now have an entire new wave of scholarly thought in the field of Americana studies, and there's a tend to accept certain transatlantic contacts. This is important to Latter-day Saints, the idea of the transatlantic transplants of the Mulekites, the Jaredites, and the Nephites may yet find substantial support in future discoveries. Petroglyphs found in Georgia, dating 2000 B.C., are parallel to those found in Scotland. But there's a great deal then that, again, in terms of questions being asked, then answers are being given. The Metcalf Stone, found at Fort Benning, Georgia, contained Minoan Linear A dating to 1300 B.C., and then in the Bahama, ruins were found in 1960s beneath the surface of the ocean in the vicinity of Bimini and Andros Islands of the British near Indies. Underwater photos show fluted columns. These fluted columns are different. There are 18 flutes instead of the 20 in the Doric and the 24 in the Ionic. There may be old world contacts here. Coins for the Mediterranean area have been found in 1790. Including 490 Syracusan coins with Roman goddess Minerva on it, two Roman coins, one brass and one of gold, several Jewish coins of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion from AD 132, and two Roman silver coins dated 137 AD and AD 191, and two copper coins with the three-headed eagle. These coins from the Mediterranean area, cropping up at different places in the United States, what do they mean? What's their significance? And the Bat Creek Stone. This Canaanite Hebrew inscription excavated in 1890s at Bat Creek, Tennessee, reads, "For the province of Judah in the dates 100 A.D. how these all arrived and were distributed throughout the United States and what happened, and their genuineness, constantly entertained and the subject of study by men of expertise. There are Roman artifacts found in Arizona. A series of inscriptions tell of a colony of Jews from Western Europe who came to America 800 A.D., including with the discovery was a 62.5-pound cross. It tells of their kingdom called Calolus, their battle with a group of Indians called the Tutesus, and of 3,000 being slain. Final date of this community seemed to have been 900 A.D. The archaeological light on the stick of Joseph in Ezekiel 37, in terms of new discoveries in ancient writings, referring to these as the writing boards instead of stick, and this may be of interest. Telluride, here on the western shores of the southern end of the Dead Sea, is a huge mountain being excavated. Evidence of a temple that demonstrates the Midianite claims of the Book of Mormons and their theological interpretation. It seems that there was a temple that may actually predate the Temple of Solomon. The area of Telluride was one of the domiciles of the son of Jethro, who gave the priesthood to Moses. Would he not perhaps be expected to have a temple? And then at Beersheba, likewise the locality of Abraham, likewise a similar type of ceremonial altar was found. These raise more questions again than the expert has been able to answer, but we understand them rather thoroughly to a great degree. Excavations at Tel Shiva in ancient biblical Beersheba, the country of Abraham, gives us a great deal more background on Abrahamic origins and temple ordinances and doctrines. The ancient old world writings in the new, there's new analysis of the interrelationships of a substantial number of examples of alleged old world scripts found in Americas. This work is being done and directed by Paul R. Chessman of the staff of BYU, who's now a mission president back east. We have also the Padilla Plates of Mexico, an analysis of the manufacture, nature, and of inscriptions on the problem of the authenticity of the metallic mini plates from Mexico, first reported in 1971. Like many other things, being carefully and cautiously examined and studied. At San Lorenzo in southern Mexico, there was a purported area of ruins that may date into the Jaredite time. Compared with archaeological sequences, this may have been a Book of Mormon city. Dr. Sorensen and others are working on the possibility of links to some of the geographical areas of this region to Book of Mormon geography and the Hill Cumorah. Cult and social structures among the Nephites in the light of archaeological work is being done by individuals. And these studies will be published eventually as part of the Book of Mormon parallels in the light of what is known about ancient American civilization, and will offer new interpretation about Nephite society. The Book of Mormon will become a valuable source book, historically, geographically, and otherwise. And the time seems to be getting ripe for its real utilization. Sitting in the seat, a rather interesting declaration. It's a relationship between ancient Mesoamerica and the Near East, a study of the significance of judgeship and speakership in the two areas, and representations of these offices in architecture and writing in Mesoamerica. The evidence of the identity of the Maya Five World Ages, and the doctrine of the ancient Near Eastern procession doctrine, documents depicting comparable astronomical lore, mythical imagery, and so forth will be made available. Tape 117 discusses the details of the gods and doctrines and the fifth sun, or the fifth world, of the ancient Aztecs and other predecessors of those peoples. The underworld of the ancient Mesoamericans are being explored in Near Eastern parallels and ancient peoples of America texts and those of the Near East, especially dealing with the place of the dead in the afterlife. Now, these and many others, in fact, it would take 30 hours just to discuss the parallels for the Book of Mormon alone. Let's go over into Egypt and the Palestinian Mesoamerican area, Mesopotamian area, for a short while. Here at Gnosis, where Sir Arthur Evans in 1900 discovered the library of the Palace of Minos, between 3,000 and 4,000 tablets from the 15th century B.C., written in Minoan Linear B., it wasn't until the 1950s that a young British architect, Ventris, deciphered the writings and showed it to be Greek. This has altered the whole picture of ancient Near Eastern civilization and brought the patriarchs of Israel into contact with people speaking languages related to their own. Modern Pylos in Messenia in Greece, where Legion in 1939 discovered 600 tablets of the Mycenaean Palace Archive. More tablets were discovered after 1952 when work resumed after World War II. These tablets in Linear B also show that the Mycenaeans were Greeks and that Greeks, whose language is often surprisingly close to our own, were busy in the Near East as early as the time of the patriarchs. At Kara Tepe in Turkey, since 1946, there have been discoveries of inscriptions in Phoenician and Hittite, telling how people migrated and founded cities in the century before Lehi. At Constantinople, where in 356 Emperor Constantinus found the imperial library, from which a vast number of ancient manuscripts came to Europe in 1453, the city had a very ancient patriarchal library and many monastic libraries. There, in the library of the Jerusalem Patriarch, the Greek Brennius in 1872 discovered, among many valuable other early Christian apocrypha and documents, a text of the Didache, which describes the organization and function of the church in the Christian world, 1840 A.D. At Bahagas Kui, also in Turkey, where beginning in 1906, Winkler excavated the royal archives of the Hittites, giving us a whole new world with 10,000 cuneiform tablets from the 14th and 13th centuries before Christ, written in Hittite, a language related to our own. Scholars had formerly maintained that the Hittites, with whom Abraham had ultimate dealings in the Old Testament, were either a myth or a scribal mistake, that they never even existed. And now whole books are being written about this culture and this group who ran sway and even controlled much of the area at different times. The great discoveries of ancient Ugarit at Ras Shamra, where Schaefer, beginning in 1929, brought forth thousands of tablets from a temple archive of the Canaanites going back to the 14th century B.C. They are in a language closely related to Hebrew and contain many expressions and concepts that are close to those of the Old Testament, making it possible to solve many biblical mysteries and brightly illuminating certain phases of early history of Israel. 30 more boxes of tablets were excavated in 1960. Cataloging and work goes on in these areas by certain experts all the time. We've already mentioned the discoveries of Qumran. Near Jerusalem was the city of Lachish, where in 1935, Starkey discovered the first of the Lachish letters. In the December issue of the Ensign, Dr. Nibley treats the Lachish letters and shows the parallels to the Book of Mormon, both in names and in chronology. Here we have the official files of a military garrison at the time of Lehi. These 18 writings on potsherd were written in Hebrew and give eyewitness accounts of the state of things in Palestine just before the fall of Jerusalem. Lachish was one of the cities put under siege by Nebuchadnezzar and reduced when Lehi was driven from the area. At Giza, near ancient Memphis along the Nile River, where the pyramid texts were discovered, cut into the walls and tombs and passages of the kings of the 4th and 5th and 6th dynasties, about 2600 B.C., and collected and first published by Maspero in 1881, we have spells and other texts. These writings are continued with new additions. And, of course, we mentioned the coffin texts already. These were generally written on the insides of non-royal wooden coffins of the 9th to the 11th dynasties and published by Dr. Beck in 7 volumes. It is now realized that the frequent resemblance of these writings to the literature of Israel is not accidental, and particularly to the temple endowment. Some of these are used in new books by Dr. Nibley. At Tel Amarna, which in 1887, only 200 cuneiform tablets were dug up, now were followed by hundreds of thousands of others, many of which were smashed and lost on the way to dealers. In 1892, Petrie discovered the source of the documents, the Royal Archives of Ignaton at Amarna. The available collection consisted at that time of 358 cuneiform tablets, being the correspondence in the Akkadian language between the Egyptians and the princes of Palestine and Syria, 1370 to 1348 B.C., during the time of Israel's wanderings in the area. Also in Egypt, the prehistoric capital of Egypt, the Hierakonpolis, in 1898, Quibel found a collection of pre-dynastic palettes containing very ancient ritual and historic texts. And just across the river in 1878, Marietta discovered the remains of a great royal library building, and to the north at Thebes, documents now reproduced in the Pergate Prize were found, was the great library of Ramesium. The Elephantine Archives, found in 1906 by Kelly and in 1911 by Sashu. Here we have the archives of a Jewish community of the 5th century. These were lost, showed up finally nearly a half a century later in a trunk in the Brooklyn Museum, where they had lain unnoticed. In our opinion, these letters written in Aramaic to Persian officials and to important Jews in Jerusalem supply the most valuable single commentary to the Book of Mormon. And we have two tapes dealing with the Elephantine Archives that have been prepared by Ty. 112, refer to them in greater depth and detail. The ancient mines of the pharaohs, where people from Palestine were employed and enslaved around 1500 BC, and where they left many, many rock inscriptions at Sarah Dibbet, El Kadim, were also discovered in 1905. And then in 1948, additions were made. They are written with Egyptian symbols, but in Canaanitish dialect, which has been identified as Proto-Hebrew. They show the early Egyptianizing of the Semites and indicate much closer ties between the cultures of Egypt and Israel than have heretofore been conceded. We've already mentioned Mount Sinai and the discoveries there. Nineveh, the third capital of Assyria, where in 1851, Layard discovered the huge library of Ashurbanipal, founded by Sargon in the 8th century B.C. Here was found what was long thought to be the original version of the flood, and many documents illustrating and confirming the history of Israel. However, older versions have been made and found and discovered, and in the light of the Ebla text, all this has been revised. Eventually, it will be proven that the Hebrew is the oldest original version, and all the rest are derived therefrom. And Nuzi, in 1925, Chiria brought forth the great archives of the Hurrians, one tablet of which can be dated 1475 B.C. These records contain accounts of men engaged in exactly the sort of activities as was Abraham and demonstrate the authenticity of the patriarchal age as depicted in the Old Testament. Much of this is from Dr. Nibley. At Sippur, where a large temple library was discovered by Ransom in 1879 and Shell in 1894, the ritual texts are important in constructing the overall picture of Near Eastern religions in general and of patternism in particular. At Nippur, another great city in the Mesopotamian area, where Hilprecht and others discovered a library of thousands of documents in 1889, including a flood story much older than the Nineveh version and much closer to that of the Old Testament. The Gilgamesh epic and many others come from these ancient tablets. There are still fruitful discoveries being made in the Fayum of Egypt, and this hunts are going on wherever monasteries once existed. In fact, this period that we now call the Age of the Monasteries, which began the last 2 years or so, sort of triggered by the great discovery of the 27 chests at the Mount Sinai Monastery, is revealing to the world that experts even like Dr. Atiyah and others who are rewriting the first and second century history of the Coptic Church in Egypt aren't even familiar with the fact that in certain of the monasteries, voluminous libraries exist of Coptic materials, some of which could easily be as old as the first and second century. Since Mark set up the Alexandrian Church, there's also the discoveries at Bar Saba made outside of Jerusalem with a secret book of Mark that has parallels to the Mormon temple endowment. Expeditions going into the areas of Mesopotamia. BYU is now participating in a new one in Syria, very near the area of Ebla. Undoubtedly, great cuneiform discoveries will be made of a civilization that was so vast it was similar to the Roman Empire. The archive discovery of ancient Ebla is a very important one. But there's a lot of work yet to be done. In one of the tapes, we outlined the nature and character of the archaeological evidence. It's difficult to assess the nature and character of it and how little we have and yet what we're receiving so abundantly. It lists a number of others not given in this present tape. Also in tape 116, we deal with the recovery of the Mexican codices and related documents and mention them in large number there. And where yet great discoveries will come, we are not anything more than susceptible to the next announcement of a journal, the next appearance of an archaeological symposium where someone will come up with new material. When we talk about the Pseudepigrapha, we're talking about 100 different titles. When we talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls, 2,100 books have been published on the Dead Sea Scrolls alone. The Nag Hammadi will require tens and tens of dozens of documents to fully understand. My library contains over 152 titles now on just the Nag Hammadi. So these are not individual isolated discoveries. Many of them are tremendously documented discoveries. For example, like the Kaira Ginzia, 250,000 documents, including a lost tradition of the life of Christ. Such discussions as Morosa, the Jewish texts which were found, discussed in tape 112, are most vital and most interesting because the many, many unusual and unique names in the Book of Mormon, both in terms of suffix, prefix, and core, are found among such discoveries as Ebla, the Elephantine archives, the Morosa Jewish texts, and the Assyrian documents, and the Lachish letters. All put together, it tells of a gigantic struggle going on in the world. Since the prophet Joseph Smith's demise and death in 1844, most of these great discoveries have begun. But they've come in a certain pattern. As experts and men were available to understand, translate, or interpret, they've been made available. Now, as there are many, many men of expertise who can read nearly any discovery made anywhere in the world, there are a few that have not yet quite been cracked, like the Maya code, but that eventually yield in time, then we can expect from this trickle, because that's all this amounts to, is a trickle, there will be a vast avalanche of discoveries that will yet come. And besides all of these, in addition to all of these, we're promised in the 107th section of the Doctrine and Covenants that the works of Enoch will be testified of in due time. We're promised that the record of John in the 93rd section of the Doctrine and Covenants will be revealed, hereafter revealed, and that we'll get more information in the 7th section of the Doctrine and Covenants on some of the information of John the Beloved and his life and activity. The records of the 10 tribes are yet to be returned. We're promised the contents of the brass plates and the rest of the work, of which we only 100th part of the Book of Mormon, and also the plates of Ether. All of these are promised us before Jesus Christ comes in his glory. Therefore, it seems that men should be prepared, interested, and studying. But all of this should be preceded by one particular study. All of these discoveries are of no use and no value individually unless you have a thorough understanding of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Not one of the 725 Christian churches or 52 Buddhist sects or any of the other religions of the world are getting any mileage out of these ancient discoveries. Rather, in fact, they're being indicted that they have lost, tremendously lost, and traditionally omitted tremendous teachings of the first century. We have been stealing the thunder of these ancient documents for 150 years. We find great consolation that the confirmation of apostasy, perversion, and bizarre additions did occur, as Joseph Smith announced. But most precisely in what he revealed 150 years ago is pure, untainted, without the bizarre and the perverted. And he gave it singularly without retracting any of it. He gave it to us linearly in systematic amounts and quantities and thoroughly during the 15 years of his active participation from 1829 to his death in 1844. And we find documents from these great discoveries confirming the legends among the Jews and among the world as a whole of the coming Ben Berechiah Joseph, so described in tape 80 and in tape 114. It's my testimony, therefore, that the Latter-day Saints can expect great things, but first they had better be prepared to understand that which they already have received. To ask for more, I don't know. And yet we're promised much more. Let us be prepared then by individual study and inquire ourselves of the Lord, are the scriptures and the things given us through the prophet Joseph Smith really true? Live by the teachings of the present prophets. Gain a testimony and be impressed by the Holy Spirit that the Church of Jesus Christ is absolutely true. The great Joseph is just that one of the great prophets of all time. And all these other things are nice to know, but as they come, we can become confident that what we have is an absolute restoration. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.